Oh, all right. Thanks so much for asking me to share. It was really neat reflecting about this particular subject because everything that just kept coming in was like blessing, blessing, blessing. Because I feel like it's one of my biggest blessings to be able to be a parent and be sober. We get tools that even parents who don't have problems with drugs and alcohol never seem to come across. And I have been really fortunate to have never drank or used in my daughter's life. I have a little girl, and she is 2. She turned 2 in July. And so, you know, in the grand scheme of motherhood, I'm still pretty new to this thing, too. I liken motherhood and parenthood in general to being newly sober, where I didn't know shit. So I was like, I remember in early motherhood, you know, like at the time I had about 6 years sober and felt pretty grounded in who I was and my choices thus far. And then all of a sudden we start having to make like big life choices about, I mean, from pregnancy on, you know, you're responsible for growing this human and for the dads raising this human. And so once she was like out in the world, I was uncomfortable and anxious. And, you know, for the women, like I had hormones streaming through me that felt like, I mean, they're like drugs. And then they started going away and I was raw. And I had to do the same thing I learned in here. I had to reach out. I had to get plugged in to people who knew what they were doing. I had to find like-minded people, and I had to listen for experience, strength, and hope. And little by little, you know, in our core family, with the help of my husband, and just like being really aware and present and conscious about what I was bringing into her life, I learned. And that's the neatest thing. Like, I learned everything that I know about being a human and raising another human, therefore being a parent, from AA. Because I didn't have a moral compass before I got here. I had a conscience, and it would speak volumes, and my stomach would tie in knots, and it would tell me that I was like going down a slippery slope, or that I was lying or screwing someone over, and I would ignore it. And then when I got sober, I started to listen to that more, which I now identify as a relationship with a power greater than myself that happens to communicate with me through my body and through my breath and through all the things that I feel uncomfortable when I'm not in relationship with a God of my understanding. I went on a tangent there. Where'd I go? And so, God, listening to myself, and little by little, I was able to be more present. That's not where I was going, but I'll just go there. So the neatest thing in thinking about this, like, I was looking at our steps and our traditions, and I really feel like the biggest thing that has helped me has been the second tradition. It's not like I wake up in the morning like I'm going to be a mother that relies on the second tradition. But it tells us that for our group purpose, which is, in my case, my family, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group or family conscience. And as long as we have that, we're okay. As long as I'm inviting God into my decisions for another human, which is like this big daunting task still to think about, as long as we're inviting God into the decisions that we make for our daughter, then we're all right. And I forget that a lot because it's like this balance of control, because we are, come on in, we are, we do have a really big task. And also, like, relinquishing control, because that's what it is. Like, people told me, I forget, in the first week, so I was, first week of motherhood, I, like, hadn't left the house. Our daughter was born at home, and so, like, we hadn't left the house. And I was anxious about riding in the car with her. All of a sudden, like, the vehicles were huge, and they were all coming at us, and I couldn't protect her. And I texted a friend, and she said, it's the first of many, 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 many tasks of letting go. And it's just like that tiny, tiny little thing. Like, I can't protect her out here in the world. And so first I did it with myself, and now I do it with another person and many other people. We let go, little by little. And I remember calling my sponsor in early motherhood, and she reminded me, God doesn't have any grandkids. And I was like, oh, okay, so we're all God's children. Like, even my child is God's child. And therefore, like, she's taken care of no matter what I do. Nature, nurture, you know, like, I really believe in aware parenting and gentle parenting, conscious parenting. But at the end of the day, like, she's gonna turn out how God wanted her to turn out. And so it's like third step all the time. Serenity prayer all the time. Like, please let me know what I can change and the rest of it, take it. And that comes back to intuition. Like, in every moment, and, you know, granted, I have a toddler, so y'all with older kids have, you know, other issues, but like, in every tantrum, I'm like, what does God want me to do here? And if I want her to grow up and be nonviolent, then I have to use nonviolence. And if I want her to be respectful, then I have to be respectful. And I learned that here too. Attraction rather than promotion. So if I'm acting that way, and instead of telling her that she should act that way, she's probably going to pick it up. And it's like that balance that I learned through sponsees. I lay the tools at their feet, and then whatever she picks up, she picks up. And that is a daunting task, you know, because I want things to turn out a certain way. And I want to look good, and I want to look like I know what I'm doing, and I want us to, like, you know, float around in our little family triad, and I don't even know. It's like, of course I want things to be good all the time, but when they're not, I use the tools that I learned through the steps. And when I really start getting down on myself, because one of my things in being an alcoholic and an addict is that I can start talking a lot of shit in my head about my parenting and about who I am and whether I'm raising her right, and I just have to trust that God picked us for her and that God picked her for us, and that all-knowing power knows exactly who we are and knows exactly who she needs to be. And so that I must have all the tools inside me to give her exactly what she needs. And there's so many tools that we have in here, you know, like, that I got to practice with other people first, and now I practice sometimes. That's my husband, he's sitting over there. In my own family, you know, like, pausing when agitated or doubtful, which I'm agitated and doubtful every day, all the time, especially lately, I'm sorry. And and there's, like, so many instructions. So, I don't know what more I can say. I hope to every day relax and take it easy, ask for intuitive thoughts and decisions, and to go from this moral compass that I got from learning the steps. And the neatest thing, my in-laws watch our daughter a lot, and last night we picked her up. We'd gone to a wedding, and my mother-in-law tells us that our daughter asked her to pray. She's two. And like this, we pray a couple times a day. And we say whatever, you know, like whatever we're going through, we go through and bless people. But I feel like our prayer is different than what I had growing up. We prayed growing up, but I didn't really feel like this power was something I could rely on in everyday life. And so she says that she asked her to hold hands, and then she says God, and then she starts listing people. You know, my mom and dad and them and our dog, and that just like, that's the good stuff, you know, because if I'm giving her that tool somehow through something, then I think we're all going to be okay. On with that. I love you guys. Grateful to be here. Grateful to be a mom. Grateful to be sober.
I'm Jonathan. I'm an alcoholic.
Let
me set my little timer here, because once I get rolling, sometimes I like to hear myself talk. Come on. Start. Okay. Let me start over. Jonathan, alcoholic. Grateful to be here. Always a pleasure to be asked to speak at a WIPOC conference. I qualify as a parent as well as an alcoholic. I have a daughter. She's 12. Her name's Kaylin. She rules. My experience with parenting in the program is, you know, kind of like Julie, I've been sober the whole time my daughter's been alive, and I'm incredibly grateful for that. 'Cause I know how I roll, and I'm so grateful that she's been saved from having to deal with me drinking. Yeah, that's amazing. So I got sober in 1998, and things were good, having fun, dating the girl I met in rehab. The old story, you know. And then a couple of, you know, we kind of, you know, broke, and then, you know, I guess it was in April-ish of 99. Is that math? Yep. I find out that I'm going to be a dad. So here I am with a year and a half. Was it a year and a half sober? And still pretty selfish and still pretty immature and still pretty new in recovery and still, you know, I went through, like, the first 9 months of my recovery were spent just kind of hanging out with this girl and going to meetings and not really working steps and not doing anything except, you know, not drinking, hanging out, doing the fellowship, but, not developing a relationship with that power greater than myself. So, you know, I had, things happen and whatever. I did get a sponsor and start working the steps at about 9 months sober. So by the time that I found out that I was going to be a parent, I had been, you know, working steps pretty actively for 6 months. So, you know, not a whole lot of growth had happened and not a whole lot. So I was still, like I said, pretty selfish, pretty unsure of myself. Not a whole lot of self-esteem had built up by that point, and still kind of, you know, was early in sobriety. So I find out that I'm going to be a dad, and I kind of flipped out. Is one of those, you know, like my higher power, our higher power, whatever higher power, chooses to teach us lessons in exactly the way that we need to be taught, I believe. And so I find out that I'm going to be a dad, and I kind of flip out, like, no, I can't do this. Like, this is not me. No. And thank goodness that I had a sponsor that I could call and turn to. And, hi guys. And you know, I don't remember like the conversations, but I remember the feeling that, you know, God never puts anything in my, you know, God never puts anything in my life that He and I can't handle together. And I just, you know, kind of accepted the fact that, okay, I'm gonna be a parent, and it's gonna be, you know, it's gonna be whatever it's gonna be, but I'm gonna show up, and I'm gonna be a dad, and I'm gonna be the best dad that I can be. So I'd never held a baby, ever. I'd never touched an infant human in my life. I went, this was in Portland, in the hospital where my daughter was going to be born. They had these classes you could sign up for and all this stuff. And I was like, yeah, like, you know, once I made that decision that, yeah, I'm going to do this thing, and I'm going to do the best I can at it. And I, you know, felt like I had support, and I felt like, you know, God was with me in this. Like, I was like, yeah, I'm going to do this. And, it's kind of mirrors the way recovery was going for me as well. Like, you know, I got to the point where, like, I can't do this by myself, and I accepted the fact that I don't have to go this alone, and that, yeah, I'm going to do this. And everything was okay. So I signed up for this class, and I learned how to wash the human and put a diaper on and do the swaddling thing. I got really good at that. And, you know, it just like that, the little, just this little bullshit class for 45 minutes or however long, like, I felt like, yeah, I got this. But I had, you know, I had tools. Like, I had some skills to go in with this. Like, yeah, I can, like, with it, the thing is dirty, I can wash the thing. So, you know, it's like I never held a baby. I don't know these things. Like, I'm going to be a dad. I have no skills. I continued to, you know, I continued to work the steps, and I continued to stay close to God and to, you know, be present for the child's mother and, you know, try to be, you know, as supporting. And what, you know, the lesson that I didn't realize I was starting to learn, but the lesson that I was starting to learn in the way that I needed to learn it was how not to be so selfish all the time, and how to put somebody else's needs before myself, before my own needs, and how to be of service. You know, I was learning how to do that. You know, I was learning how to do it in a program. I had gotten involved in WIPA conferences right around the same time, a little earlier on, learn how to be of service there, but really learning how to be of service living with a pregnant woman, getting ready to be, you know, getting ready to be a dad. So, fast forward, the kid's born, everything's great. All of a sudden, I'm a dad. And, you know, we're in the hospital, and I remember my first, like, oh crap moment. Like, I can't do this. She got the hiccups. And, and we're in the hospital, and she's sitting there, and I'm holding her, and she starts to hiccup. And it's cute, little hiccups. But I was like, what do I do? She's got the hiccups. Crap, what do I do? What do I do? So buzz the nurse. Nurse comes in. What? She's got the hiccups. Nurse is like, so? I'm like, what do I do? She's like, nothing. So it was like, oh, huh, okay. So like, my first like big catastrophe with the kid was like, okay, that's cool. So I had, you know, we left the hospital. I had the driving 15 miles an hour down the side streets to the house. And, you know, it just kind of went like that, where I would like, you know, come up against these big scary parenting things. Like, you know, the first time she got sick and the first time, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And just trust that everything's going to work out, and ask for help, and things. I surprised myself in how kind of naturally things came. And, you know, it's talks about in the 11th step, it talks about, you know, we start to feel that, you know, intuition, and the, you know, the closer that we stay to our higher power, and the closer that we stay in these steps and continue to be of service, the next right action comes. You know, there's, you know, I've learned to trust my gut in life in general, but in parenting as well. You know, I've learned that, like, when my house is in order, my gut's pretty right on. When my house is not, you know, that's life. I don't think that's really, I don't think we in recovery have a lock on that. But, you know, when my house is in order, my gut is right on. And I'm really grateful to have that knowledge and to have that kind of compass to feel good about my parenting. Damn, tangents. Oh, I know. So the other kind of, you know, my other experience with parenting is like, as my daughter's mom and I haven't been together since she was just shy of 3 years old. We split up a long time ago, and it was gnarly. And the other thing that I was able to do, just, you know, that I was able to build another lesson that I was able to learn as a part of that situation, you know, was, again, to put my needs or my wants or my, you know, whatever aside, and act in the best interest of my daughter. And what that looked like is, you know, I had all sorts of resentment and this, that, and the other thing against her mother. And I was able to say, okay, I can't, this isn't going to work. And I worked the steps on that stuff right away and got, you know, dealt with the resentment. And I was able to decide that, you know, I'm going to, and she did the same thing, which, and it's super lucky. I don't know, luck or whatever, but it's, you know, we've been able to really be effective co-parents as a result of applying these steps and principles to our relationship as co-parents. You know, I was able to get, you know, put my resentment and fear and all that kind of stuff aside and say, okay, you know, I need to work with this woman, regardless of how our relationship looks. You know, we need to work together to raise this kid. And we've done a pretty amazingly good job of that. Like, I'm not, like, we've, you know, with the help of my higher power and her higher power and, you know, a lot of willingness, you know, we've been, like, the one thing that we've never argued or fought or disagreed about or anything was how to raise the kid. And, you know, I think that she, my daughter, has really really benefited from that. I see a lot of parents that split up, and you know, it just there's a lot of messed up things that we can do out of fear and resentment that that really comes out sideways on the kids. And I'm very grateful that I was shown a way not to do that. You know, because I didn't know how. Like, I had to be shown through sponsorship, through a lot of prayer, and a lot of just talking to people. My daughter in 6 weeks will be a teenager. And it's started already. She dyed the hair, and she's a good kid though. I mean, like, at the end of the day, she's got a really good head on her shoulders, and like the more I'm able to just kind of stay out of her way at this point, you know, guidance when, you know, my job is to keep her safe at this point and pretty much stay out of her way. And she's a cool kid. I mean, she's into all sorts of good stuff. She does good in school. She's got friends. She has fun. She's athletic. She's, you know, all these things that I would hope for my kid to be, she is. And she's weird. Which, I mean, she didn't have a choice in that one. That was just gonna happen. But she's just the best kind of weird there is. And, you know, she has taught me so much about just how to be of maximum service to somebody else. That's loud. Time's up. That was kind of what I wanted to close with, was just that she's taught me a lot more than I've taught her. And I'm very grateful for the opportunity to be a parent, and, I wouldn't have it any other way. I'm very, very grateful for the opportunity to be a sober parent, because I really wouldn't want it the other way at all. And yeah, thanks again for having me speak, and that's it.
Okay, this is the first time I'm using a timer. You gave me the idea. So once again, the meeting, we learned how to do things. Okay, hit start, whoa! It's like sand in an hourglass. I'm easily fascinated. I'm a big kid, so let's just get that out of the way right now. That said, they gave us little thank you cards, but look, isn't this the cutest little puppy? And I'm setting it up here. My name is Dorian. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm from Carmichael, Sacramento, California. But I'm putting the puppy up here because it reminds me of when I was brand new in this program, and I got so sober November 25th, 1986, and the first 3 years were all like gray and black, so I don't remember how much time I had, but it was brand new, and I was young. So if you're lucky, you get to get old in this program. But I was young, and so some of my friends that lived in Galt said, we're going somewhere, get in the car, and they threw me in the car, and we end up in Yosemite in the winter, there's snow all over, and we set up a tent. So we're snow camping. I'd never been camping. We're snow camping in Yosemite, and apparently there was a conference. And so we go in, and I put this up here because I walked into the room, and people are mingling. They know each other. I was so new, I didn't even do that yet. I just found a safe chair and sat there with a hot cup of coffee. And I looked up, and on the podium was this teddy bear. And I thought, oh, I kind of like that. You know, I could relate to that teddy bear up there. And then the guy that got up and started speaking said, I am here to comfort the disturbed and disturb the comfortable. And I thought, yes, I fit in that category. I'm very disturbed. So teddy bear is going to comfort me. And he told a story. that has flashed over and over in all the years I've been a parent here. And the story he tells to me embodies what parenting is, and at least my experience of it. And but the point he was making was about our relationship with God. But to me, it was about parenting. So he says he had a little son at the time, and they lived in the Midwest or something where it would snow, right? And so this little boy, you know, like 5, 6 years old, 4 or 5, whatever, he was trying to get the little boy in this little onesie like snowsuit thing because the kids were outside playing. The little boy wanted to go out and play. That's what boys do, right? And so he's getting him, trying to get, and he'd get his arm in, and then he'd go to put a leg in, the boy would pull the arm out, and they'd, an hour later, the father is just sweating buckets, darn near sitting on this kid to zip this onesie up, gets him in there, little hood on, little muffins, he's ready to go. He opens the door, little boy runs out into the snow with his friends, and it hits the man. Two things. One, that little boy is not thinking about him. He's not going to turn around and go, "Daddy, thank you so much for all the effort you put into putting me into that snowsuit so that I can be healthy and have fun with my friends." And the second thing that dawned on him was, that's exactly how we as human beings, especially us alcoholics and addicts, behave with this God that brings us into this program. We wrestle and we do so. That said, now you know what I'm like as a parent. Okay. And the interesting thing about it, I was listening to these guys, and I don't know what their childhood was like, but I was one who never, ever, ever considered having a child. Period. End of discussion. And the reason for that was because by the time I was 16, I had come from a family of renal failure, and I was already well off into drinking and drugging, and I knew I wasn't going to live to see 30 anyway. And the doctors had told me at 16 that because of the high fevers I had all the time, that I was probably infertile. So I just tossed it out of my mind. So I get to sobriety, right? And I come from this colorful family, I'll call it that. My dad was raised on the reservation here. He's Tonawatam. And my mother's family comes from Chihuahua, Mexico. And so it was always gambling and booze and smoking and carousing, and we traveled all over, and I loved it. And then something flipped inside my dad, and the violence entered the home, and I was the one he took it out on. And so at 18, I didn't leave home. He started shooting his gun at me, and that's how I ended up leaving home at 18. So I get to this program with that kind of parenting. I'm going along about my business. I'm 60 days into it. I go to the anniversary of Roseville, January 27th, 1987, and I'm talking to my friend Regina. And people are coming in for the dance after they're speaking to me. I'm talking to her, and out of the corner of my eye, I see these alligator skin cowboy boots. So I look up a little further. These nice jeans. Then I see the rodeo buckle. Now you've got my interest. The button-down shirt, and I look at the face, and it's like, I turned to her. I didn't even skip a beat. I said, "He can have me." And we ended up dancing the whole night. We had a good time, apparently. Well, anyway, that's a side story. So we become friends, because at the time I was still married. And my mother, myself, she was my dad's mistress when she became pregnant with me. So just in case we think we can escape it. Anyway, and he was involved with somebody. So we become friends because we're trying to do life the AA way. You know, have integrity and honor the thing, our current commitment, and all those words we hate. And so we're hanging out. He breaks up with her. My husband said he liked me better drunk. We get divorced. So now it's on. And we started having a great time in our little group of friends, because you know how when we're new, we have our group of friends, right? And so I'm going along in life, and my sponsor from day one, her name is Angel. And Angel believed in one thing and one thing only: find a God. And just every day, because I'd ask her, "What do you want me to do?" She'd go out today and take one action that takes you beyond your current spiritual understanding. So I'm going along, right around 2 years sober, and this little thing inside says, "Have a kid." Literally, have you guys ever had the voice that's like, you swear it's audible, so you turn, you look, well, that's what I was doing. So, and I tell Angel, I'm like, this has been going on for a while, and she goes, what do you think it means? I said, I don't know. And so I mentioned it to my friends, and her dad is one of them. So about a week later, we're all hanging out at some coffee shop, and everybody got up to do something. He leans over and he goes, you know, I think you'd be a great parent, and I'm willing to help you out. And I thought about it, and I thought, well, you have good breeding. I mean, it comes from a very big ranching family out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. And so there and then, we agreed we were going to have a kid. And so we had our daughter. Now, the thing about it is, she was born January 11th, 1989. And she was 8 pounds, 11 ounces. I was well into this thing, and it's like, I'm not using drugs no matter what, even in a hospital. So I went through labor without anything, and from the very beginning, the old-timers said a few things, and they've always resonated with me. And one was, expect the unexpected. So just the fact that I wanted to have a kid, there was some evidence. At the very beginning, they said, watch for the miracles. Don't leave before the miracle. There's miracles all the time. And that had been my experience, and it didn't stop becoming a parent. And in while I was in labor, and we got to this point, and I'm laying there, I'm in labor, and this voice is in my ear, this lady's voice, and she goes, hi, I was leaving the hospital, but I saw on your chart, written all over it, no drugs, no drugs. She goes, so I'm thinking you might be a friend of Bill? And I was like, huh? And the father's name is Jeff. And Jeff goes, yeah, what? You know, and she goes, well, I'm a nurse, but I was getting off shift and I saw that, so I'm here to let you know that I'll walk through this with you. And again, I got to find out there's angels. So we had this daughter. I'm fast-forwarding really fast because she's going to be 25 in January, so it's a long friggin' story of parenting. So good luck with the teenager. So glad she's a toddler. Good luck. So we have this little girl, and what we decided to do was ask everybody to leave the moment the child was born, and we had come to believe, thank God, both he and I, that the only reason we were here was because there was some God. Wow, Kelly. For those of you in the listening audience, Kelly has just walked in looking like a ghoul. Okay, so we learned that we're, like you said, all God's children, so we offered this baby up. And we said, we understand that this is not our child. It does not belong to us, that this is your kid, God. If it were our kid, we'd jack it up. I'm trying to keep my language clean. We understand it isn't, so we're going to ask you to guide us in being parents. That's how our life started. We had agreed at the beginning, because we came to know that we were not going to, there was not going to be a picket fence, there wasn't going to be a wedding, there wasn't going to be any of that. We were just two really good friends who agreed we were going to have a kid. And so we agreed that for the first year, I would stay home and he would work. And we did that. And in that year, I got to discover things, because see, for me, my mom was never around. Never, ever, ever. But here I was with the gift of getting to do something I didn't even know how to do because it wasn't done for me. And so I relied upon the people of this program to tell me what it is to do, because I didn't know. I had no clue. One of the suggestions I got was to go to ACA stuff. So I went to these ACA things. Another suggestion I got was take parenting classes. So I took parenting classes. Another suggestion I got was to read some books. And I ran across this book. And it was really cool. I don't know why, but it literally like jumped off the shelf in the bookstore. And it was called The Parent-Child Journey. And it was written by a husband and wife who were both nurses. But it was the spiritual connection and the spiritual walk of a parent and a child. And then I was also, another book I read was It Was Already on Fire When I Laid Down on It by Robert Fulghum. And in there, good book. Yeah, see, I like those kinds of titles. And in there it said, it advised that instead of barging into our kids' room, we knock on the door first. It advised that we don't answer any questions they're not asking because they're not listening. If they don't ask, they're not listening.
Wow,
that was key. And then I was walking into my home group one day, and we had this little old timer he since passed named Phil. And Phil had, he would bang on the table when he shared and go, God, God, and he was a crotchety old dude, and he had hearing aids in each ear. And when people were talking way off topic, he'd just turn them off. And so I walked into the home group, and Phil said, he called me Cal Poly, because that's where I went, and so did he. And he goes, Cal Poly. And I said, yes. And he said, you're mom now, right? And I said, yeah. And he goes, well, I have three kids and none of them are screwed up. Do you know why they're not screwed up? And I said, why? And he said, because I minded my own business. I said, okay. What I did was, that prompted me, and what I did was I realized the old timers had also always said that these steps, this program, these pages in our big book work on anything. I would like to say that parenting just flowed through me like a channel of God, but it didn't. Because of my background, that would flare up. I would find myself with my jaw tight and I wanted to hurt something. What I learned from the people in this program is when that happens, walk away. I walked away a lot. Not in an abandoning sense, but if she's in the house, I'm going outside. If she's outside, I'm going in the house. One time, now you get to hear the stories, because these are really, really cool. One time, I love my daughter, I love my daughter, I love my daughter. One time, because now after a year, he and I went our separate ways, so I'm the single parent on this panel. And one time, I went to pick her up from elementary school, and at the time I was working in law enforcement, and when you're, you know, it's a peculiar kind of breed that works in law enforcement. We have this thing in our head, and I've noticed it's different than what I call John Q. Public. And so, so if I say something, I meant it. I'm not repeating it. It's kind of like, to me, if I say it, it's the law, so abide by the law. So the law was be outside at that point when I come to pick you up. I go to pick her up. She ain't out there. I wait about 5 minutes. That's as long as I can wait. And she still ain't out there. So I go in, and I'm at the counter, and I'm like, where's my daughter? And they go, okay, so they can, bottom line, 30 minutes, 45 minutes, nobody can find her. Janitorial staff has looked, et cetera. She is not on that campus. Now I've shifted to utter fear. And when they found her and her little group of friends who'd gone to the park behind, the little group comes out and I go, you know, that Monica comes to me, which is my daughter's name, Monica. Monica comes to me, and the little girls start to walk off. And I said, oh, wait a minute. And I get down eye level with them, and I explain to them that that girl right there means more to me than my own life. And I will do whatever it takes to ensure she is safe. That includes warning you that if you ever assist her in doing stuff she's not supposed to do or have her join in, not only will she be in trouble, but I'm coming for you too. One of the little girls went to tell me that she was going to tell her parents. I said, that's fine. I'll drive you home and tell them myself. That's the kind of parent I was. I was so pissed, so fear-based, so mortified, so terror-stricken. But I knew I needed to punish her somehow, but I knew not to even touch her because of what was going on inside of me. So I drove to this place where I knew there was a little track, and I told her, get out of the car and run laps. And she got out and started running. And at one point she goes, Mom, how long? I said, till you can get near me without me being afraid, I will hurt you badly. That's all I knew to do. But in my family, as it would have been so different. So I share that with you because I learned here, and I learned as a result of the steps on my own self and becoming comfortable in my own skin. I learned also that I don't ever get to be who I'm not. And a lot of what's happened in my past, I'm not gonna escape it. I gotta go through it. Not avoid it, not ignore it, not shove my head up. A friend of mine, Roland, used to always share in meetings, a lot of us are like ostriches. We stick our head in the sand and think nobody can see our ass. And we get to learn here how not to be ostriches. Recently my daughter, lately, a couple weeks ago as a matter of fact, she said, Mom, she texts me, she does these random texts, Mom, I am so glad that you told me not to hang out with dumb people. I'm at work, I have no recollection of this, right? So I'm at work, I'm like, so I call her. I'm like, did I tell you that? And she goes, oh yeah, you used to tell me all the time, don't hang out with dumb people. If you bring dumb kids home, I'm putting them out of the house. And I said, wow. I said, okay, why are you happy? She goes, well, because she's in retail now, right? She graduated from college in May and she's in retail. And she said, these teenage girls came in the shop and they were dumb as doornails, Mom. They were just stupid. And after they left, I turned to my coworker, this lady, and said, I am so glad my mother told me not to hang out with dumb people. She's right. They do grow, you know, go in groups. I was like, wow. So you're right. We don't know what they're listening to or what they're paying attention to. When she was real little, I used to always say, you must have lost your mind. You must have lost your mind. I mean toddler age. So me and the sponsees are sitting in my living room one afternoon, and in comes little Monica, and she starts lifting things up and looking behind couches and chairs, and finally, so long, you know, and they're all looking at me like, you know, and I'm like, gotta do something. And so I turn, I go, Mo. And she goes, uh-huh. And I go, what are you doing? She goes, I'm looking for my mind. So we don't know the effect of what we say on our kids. I'd like to tell you it was all roses, but it wasn't. Your daughter's entering the teenage years. I will say a prayer for you. I experienced things as a clean and sober parent that made me wish I was using and drinking. I experienced things that, with her, and not once would I say she was a bad kid. Not once would I say she was, you know, never gonna amount to anything. What I got to recognize, and a lot of it had to do with my participation in Young People's and Alcoholics Anonymous, is that she's a regular average kid. They do stuff. And I would ask her, what was the thought you had, because I learned it here, what was the thought you had that preceded that action? And as a teenager, she was very honest. Mom, and she would, for hours sometimes, think about it, and she'd go, I don't recall having a thought before. And I'd say, I can accept that because I understand that. I understand that. Today I stand before you, the sponsor of a young man that went to high school with my daughter. I get to give him a 2-year chip in about a month or two. And I was meeting with him the other weekend, and another friend of theirs ended up in the program and just went back out and has about 20 days now, we figure. And he looked at me and he said, it brings me such relief when I look at the people that were in our high school class, and what's gone on with them, and the suicides, and the drinking, and the drugs, and all the stuff, the young mothers. He goes, it brings me joy to think of your daughter. I don't know what her life path is going to be. But I do know that I never reneged on that promise that day she was born. That's God's kid. My only job, like the example of that speaker that day, is to get her in that little suit so she can be healthy and safe and go out and enjoy life. So what I brought into the home all the time was this program, because for this alcoholic, That's really all I have. It's all I have to give. And the longer I'm sober, the more I know that. Thank you.
Thank you guys very much. Let's give them one more hand. All right. Should we close with the Serenity Prayer?